For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. Pleased to be with you for the next couple of hours to talk about the Winnipeg Jets following a very busy week, a week of four games since we last joined you on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jets compiling a record of 2-1-1 in those four games, defeating the Maple Leafs last Sunday. It's hard to believe that was only 6 days ago. It feels like it was about 60 days ago. Losing to the Carolina Hurricanes on Tuesday, defeating the Seattle Kraken, and then, of course, last night, losing to the Vancouver Canucks, rather, by a 4-3 margin in a shootout. 2-1-1 is better than the Jets have been playing as of late, but certainly the team wants to go on a more extended streak of wins than they have been recently able to string together. Gentlemen, good to see you this morning. It has been a whopping 8 hours since we last got together. I hope your lives are better. 8 hours since we last spoke.
Oh, absolutely. They're better. We rocked the post-game show, had a little bit of sleep. Hopefully you guys got, maximum sleep. I know I went right to bed as soon as I got home. Not true. I had a bowl of frosted mini wheats. Then I went to bed. Just going back to last night, and then, you know, maybe we can kind of look at the game as a whole. You don't like mini wheats, Drew? What's going on there?
I like frosted mini wheats. They're a fine cereal. It was 1 a.m. Why did you need frosted mini wheats at 1 a.m?
Well, there's a lot of things that I don't need that I do. But I by the way, you're more of a Fruit Loops guy, right?
I'm not. I mean, I don't enjoy sugary cereals anymore. I'm old, and as a result, I think I just have multigrain Cheerios are very big in our house. So my son enjoys multigrain Cheerios.
Yep. We have blueberry Cheerios too.
I don't like them at 1 a.m. It was not, it was not in my realm of thought process to go have a snack after the post game show ended.
Well, Drew, and the viewers and the listeners on the podcast might be surprised to hear this, but like you don't inherit a body that's 240 pounds, right? Like you have to build that 240 pounds up, right? So, that includes, eating frosted mini wheats at 1 a.m. But enough about our, breakfast cereals.
I don't know, Ezzy. It seems to be hot in the chat.
Frosted Flakes, I'll also give a shout-out.
The truth of the matter is,
for the record, I'll jump in here. Rob Mahoney, I actually love regular shredded wheats, but I've loved them since I was a kid. They're good. I also indulge in some sugar cereals.
Regular shredded wheat, you might as well just, take a chunk of a hay bale and put some milk in it.
It's actually delicious. You don't know what you're missing.
What I was going to say, it's actually, that's probably the healthiest thing you've ever eaten at 1 a.m. Let's be honest. There was the time when, before you were married and a civilized human being, weren't you frying a hamburger at 3 a.m. that you then passed out and forgot and left on the stove or something?
Yeah, that did happen once. I also woke up once with a full piece of pizza, under my back, which was probably a bit of a low point for me in my life.
We have the clip.
And then you ate it.
Yeah.
Well, it's pizza. I'm not going to let pizza go to waste, Dave M.
We have the audio of that story that we can we'll bring up one day, just because it's still hard to believe that
nobody wants to see that.
You're a functioning human being. Well, functioning, I guess.
Semi-functioning. But, getting back to the Jets in last night's game, guys. The chances the Jets had in overtime, the chances they had in the third period. I mean, they could have easily got the clean 2 points. So I think, when you're looking at just those two games against the Kraken and the Canucks, like obviously the game against the Kraken was extremely impressive. The Jets deserve full marks from start to finish. They were the better team. The Kraken had a bit of a pushback, but for the most part, Connor Hellebuck saw everything, a lot of shots from the outside. And then last night's game, second game of a back-to-back, you're still without Neil Pionk. And then obviously Wheeler goes down, but you're still able to, pretty much control overtime and almost get that extra point. And then obviously, in the shootout, they weren't able to solve Thatcher Demko. But Carolina is one of the best teams in the NHL. I think what we saw was when the Jets play a team like that or a team like the Islanders, even though the Islanders are in the basement of that Metro division, those are kind of the teams that the Jets struggle, right? Those teams that have, you know, really good defensive structure. So yeah, 2-1-1 is a pretty good record. You'd like to have, you know, one more point from last night's game, but look at, you've got a lot of time between, you know, today and Tuesday. You can rest. The Buffalo Sabres are not a very good team. We're going to have Marty Baron on to talk about the Sabres. I mean, this is just a team that's just continues to be a mess. So it's not like you have, you know, a tough game when you come back. And then you do have some tough games after that on the homestand, right, Dave? Like Washington, St. Louis. St. Louis right now is down a bunch of players and a bunch of goalies, but they continue to win. But that game on Washington on Friday night, next Friday against Washington, that's going to be a tough one, one of the best teams in the East. But yeah, overall, I think, you know, this week was much better than the preceding week when, you know, the Jets were just trying to end that losing streak.
You know, what I wanted to talk to you guys about is, you know, we sit here on the 11th of December, you know, we're 27 games into the season. The Jets sport a record of 13-9-5, which is basically the definition of average. You know, if you need to win, you know, half your games, the Jets have basically done that. They've got a few of the loser points that are always so necessary. You know, how does this team get more consistent? That's the question I think that bedevils the players. I think it bedevils the franchise. I think it bedevils a lot of the fans that this is a team that, you know, not that long ago was 9-3-3. Since they were 9-3-3 and everybody was at the top of the world, let me do some quick math in my head. I believe they're 4-6-2. So, you know, they had a great, you know, 15 game stretch. Now they've had a lousy or a, you know, a lousy 12 game stretch. So how does this team get to be more consistent? What needs to be in their game? What needs to be, I don't know if it's necessarily a change, but, you know, clearly this team is now going to be at a bit of a crossroads this season. Blake Wheeler injured in last night's game, according to Jets head coach Paul Maurice. No specific timeline, but it's not going to be a short-term injury. It's going to be a longer-term injury for the Jets captain. No specifics as of yet. That won't come until Monday when the team returns to the ice. So, Dave M., how does this team get more consistent?
Well, I mean, if I knew the answer to that, Drew, I'd say the Jets should put me on the payroll and start paying me some big money because...
Okay, let me rephrase the question then. What needs
Hold on, you're not on the payroll?
Well,
he's on the Moose payroll.
Yeah, maybe.
What needs to change then in terms of, what needs to change in terms of their on-ice performance to get more consistency?
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, one, I think, is they probably need to start rolling all four of their lines. I mean, their fourth line hasn't actually looked bad. I think, you know, these guys have been able to chip in, and Paul Maurice has a refusal. He, you know, he relies so heavily on his top guys, almost to the point of burnout. And, you know, sometimes it works, but the reality is this stretch isn't working for them right now. And he went to the time zone comment yesterday about how it's kicked their ass. Well, they've got 2 days off, and you're in the central time zone. So, you know, and as he said, you can build some momentum. You know, you can say it's been a bad stretch. You can also say, okay, you've won, you know, two of your last three or whatever the number is. And, or you're, I guess they've actually won 1-1, right? But
not last 2-1 and one in their last four.
2-1 in their last four. But, you know, and then you beat Buffalo and you build a little more momentum. Then you'd be 2-3. And then that sets you up because you have a nice gap to kind of, again, continue to rest and recover for the Capitals, and then you face the Blues. So, I mean, does it look particularly taxing? I don't know. I mean, number one, and I know their PK has been better, obviously, with the way they've gone, they've 7 straight kills. That's good. They've got a huge, you know, hill to climb in that regard. So that's not going to look pretty anytime soon, that number for the Winnipeg Jets. But you can slowly but surely improve in that realm. I think a recall of someone like David Gustafson will definitely give you, if David Gustafson is recalled, that's just our conjecture.
It seems inevitable. It's got to be him because, I mean, you're down a forward. You know that Blake Wheeler's not going to be an option for the next little while.
Yeah,
and you don't have an extra forward in the press box after losing Riley Nash.
Well, and really, you know, Drew, what are the options? Like, you know, I was kind of talking to Dave about that. You know, Christian Reichel is a guy that you might call up. I mean, the veterans on the Moose that I think you're considering are Austin Pagansky or Mikey Essiemont, but David Gustafson is the obvious one, right, Dave? I think a lot of people will be shocked if it's not Gustafson who's the next one called up.
No, it's got to be. It absolutely has to be David Gustafson. I mean, he's been the best Moose player. I mean, he's got, I mean, I'm not a huge, I'm not, I don't necessarily always equate points to how you play, but he is the leading points getter right now on the Moose squad with 7 goals and 9 assists. I mean, this Moose squad is actually remarkably consistent, like ironically, considering that's the word Drew asked me for, but, and balanced, I guess is probably a better word actually, because they don't have anybody, I think, in the top 30 of scoring, and yet they're one of the best teams because they've got balance and they've got scoring across the board. So it's not as if he's lighting it up and has, you know, 30 points in 17 or 18 games, but he's been very consistent for this Moose team. And I think, you know, it's funny because last night when we were talking about Gustafsson, one of the comments was, well, he didn't look so good in his first, you know, NHL go around. And I said, well, that was 2 years ago. And he's had two seasons of pro. He's an older player now at this point. And like I said, he's done the required marinating in the AHL. It's time to give David Gustafsson a shot. Now, look, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, I understand why you're not bringing David Gustafsson up because of the way Paul Maurice doesn't play his fourth line. And it's not ideal for David Gustafsson to come up and play 4 minutes, 5 minutes. You're not going to get any impact from David Gustafsson in that role. Now, he may get a little more time if you're going to trust him to be, you know, the second pairing after Kopp and Lowry. So Gustafsson with someone else, sure. But the reality is that if you're only going to play him in like a 4 to 6 minute role, sure, he can do it. It's not ideal. And I think from a Jets perspective, they, like I said, if they don't keep a guy like Andrew Kopp, well, they want David Gustafsson to be the guy who's going to step in and play that role. Because like I said, defensively, the guy is excellent. And I think offensively, he's added an element over the last two seasons that he didn't necessarily possess previously. We started to see it when he went back to Sweden in the second tier there, and he, you know, playing for Tingsryd, which is his hometown, and he looked really good for them. And it was funny because I remember I talked to him when he was there, and I did a chat with him on for the site, and it was interesting just to see like him talk about how he had added that element, and he had always focused on being defensively sound and really good faceoffs, but now he added a little bit of that offense to his game. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think he's a guy who, if you put him into a, like I said, a cop type role, you're going to have good success with him. And maybe, you know, he goes to be, I mean, ideally, Adam Lowry maybe becomes your fourth line center and David Gustafsson is your third line center. I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's not. But the reality is, I think he's a guy who can plug and play in any spot. And maybe, like I said, with Wheeler down, you're not going to put Gustafsson at that spot. But maybe you have a guy like Christian Vesalainen who's got a good shot, put him into a role, or Jansen Harkins, something like that. I mean, obviously, as he said last night, most likely going to be a Paul Stastny, but I think you have these young guys who you can give more responsibility to, and they might be able to go with, take the ball and run with it.
Well, let me follow up on that point, because logically, as I agree with you that it does make sense that Paul Stastny would move up in the lineup. If that happens, though, does that leave the Jets' bottom six not depleted, but does Paul Maurice have enough trust in the bottom six then to be where he's going to use them and be confident in giving them enough ice time? Could you see a situation where Paul Maurice elects to keep Paul Stastny in that bottom half of the lineup in the forwards, allow, you know, because of the confidence that he would have there, and maybe move somebody else unexpected higher in the lineup, like a Christian Vesalainen, to Dave's point, or like an Evgeny Svechnikov, who had played so well higher up in the lineup and then was benched for the last half of last night's game? You know, it's likely going to be Stastny, I would agree, but is that the best use of the Jets' entirety of their forward group?
Yeah, I know where you're going here. You know, I just want to take a step back because, you know, we've been doing this show for almost 13 years, and how many years, you know, week after week, month after month, we're talking about whether it's the forward line combinations or the D pairs. Obviously this year, like, you know, the D pairs have been exactly the same. Now that Neil Pionk is out, obviously Beaulieu's in there. Yeah, I think it's going to be Stastny, Drew, but like my kind of, you know, other answer to that would be, I don't think, you know, it really matters, to be honest with you, if Stastny is on your second line or your third line. Like, I would probably say that, you know, Vesalainen would be the next candidate just because of the way he's played. But, you know, if we can go just back, Drew, to what you said, you know, I wanted to get something in here about the Jets playing more consistently, because, you know, again, we don't have, you know, the answers here. We just have kind of our opinions, and, you know, our insights here watching this team kind of on a nightly basis. And, you know, I think one of the biggest issues, like we talked about, you know, there hasn't been a lot of balanced scoring at times, right? Like a lot of the goals have been coming from, you know, the usual suspects, Connor, Dubois, Ehlers, Scheifele. Obviously Wheeler got his first goal last night, but I think, you know, watching this team through 27 games, you know, one thing that I think does have to change, you know, in order for the Jets to put together a nice winning streak and build going into the playoffs, is I think they have to play more consistently in terms of their style, right? Because like when you talk about consistency, there's a lot of parts to that, right? Mm-hmm. But when you think about, you know, like some of the teams the Jets have really struggled, I mentioned it, you know, at the top of the show, right? Like Carolina, they were shut out by the Islanders. You know, they lost, they had trouble against the Penguins. They didn't play well. That was the game, Drew, that you were there as a fan. Like, I think, you know, when the Jets are playing the best, we know what that style looks like, right? Like an aggressive forecheck. This is a team that needs to feed off of the transition game, but it's also a team that has to be able to find other ways to score goals when that transition game is being shut down.
Sure.
In my opinion, teams that are able to slow the Jets down through the neutral zone and force them to play that kind of dump and chase hockey and not score, you know, off of those kind of, you know, speed plays where, you know, Connor, Scheifele, and, or whether it's Ehlers and Dubois, there's no shortage of guys, you know, Kopp even, you know, guys that can, you know, make it happen off of transition. You have to find other ways to score. And we know that, you know, sometimes it's not always pretty to, you know, dump the puck in and then just try to create something down low. But that's something that I would say, you know, we've seen here through 27 games. Like you watch the game against, you know, whether it's the last two games against Seattle or Vancouver, and then you contrast that with the game against Carolina or some of the other games. Like, look at the game against the Devils. Like,
so the Jets the Leafs, have trouble the with Oilers, structured like, teams.
Exactly. And that's kind of, and I think that's kind of finding, you know, ways to, you know, make those in-game adjustments. Like, why have the Tampa Bay Lightning been so successful and won the last two Cups? There's obviously, you know, the superstar players that they have. They have, you know, arguably the best defenseman in the game, one of the best goalies, and a bunch of superstar forwards. But the Lightning are basically able to play whatever game, I mean, the specific game dictates, right? Like they had guys like, you know, Blake Coleman and Barclay Goodrow and Pat Maroon that can kind of play that heavier style game. And I realize, guys, that, you know, the NHL, this isn't 2011, and we're not talking about the big band Bruins. Like the NHL has changed a lot in the last 10 years. But I'm just saying that's something that I think, you know, we've seen the Jets struggle when a team plays a really structured game and they shut down that neutral zone, as I mentioned. You know, sometimes the players get frustrated, and that's when, you know, you need a line like, you know, the Lowry, Harkin, Stastny line to step up and kind of get one of those quote-unquote greasy goals.
But isn't that on the coaching then, Dave? I mean, as he's, you know, articulated pretty well, you know, how the game plan for teams to shut down the Jets. And I don't think he's saying anything that's, no offense, Ezzy, that's revolutionary or no. Earth-shattering.
I mean, look at the Montreal series, sorry, Drew. I mean, that was a perfect example of a team that just they couldn't get through the Canadian stifling defense. And to their credit, the Canadians, I mean, they got all the way to the Stanley Cup final. They frustrated the Golden Knights. They frustrated
they
the
won't
Leafs.
This year.
But yeah, exactly. The Leafs, pardon me, the Canadians aren't making the playoffs this year. But I mean, this goes back a couple of years now that, you know, the Jets have had struggles against those quote unquote kind of defensive minded teams.
Well, isn't that then, Dave, on the coach to find a way to have an alternate method of success when your primary method does not work? Because every team in the league knows, quote unquote, how to try and shut down another team. You know, they are often varying degrees of success at that because of talent, because of, you know, skill set discrepancies from one team to the next. But, you know, the recipe for shutting down the Jets is apparent, and I haven't seen any evidence that the Jets have a alternate recipe to counter when those teams are able to do what they want to do against the Jets, Dave.
Yeah, and I think that's what we've talked about at any point. I think it's all about in-game adjustments, right? And part of it is also like the team being willing to stick to the game. And I mean, I don't want to go too moosey here on you guys, but I mean, I thought it was one of the...
Here, moosey.
Yeah, but I thought it was an interesting comment from, you know, assistant coach Eric Dubois, who we spoke to last night after the Moose game. And he talked about how the team learned, right? They learned that they had to stick to what they knew would work for them. And so not changing and not cheating and not, and even though they lost in Laval, he felt like they started to get away from things in the third period because they were chasing the game. And yesterday, I mean, look, they outshoot Grand Rapids 20-6, and they find themselves in the second period. It was 0-0 after one. They find themselves down 2-0 after 40 minutes, even though they'd only given up six shots and they'd taken 20. And Calvin Pickard had played very well for Grand Rapids, the Winnipegger. But, you know, they didn't change their style. They didn't need to because they were confident in the way they'd been playing, and they kept it going. And that's one instance. And then, of course, they scored four in the third period and won the game. But I think what I'm getting at is if you see something's working and you can think that you have that consistency in your game, then you've got to kind of stick with it to see if you can break through. However, if you see that it's not working and it's not working in a, you know, not through one game, through two games, through three, I mean, part of it is on a bigger scale, you have to be willing to adjust, but we've talked about it, right? Like there is that coach that the impetus is on the coaching staff, right? Like it's on you in the first intermission or the second intermission, if you don't see something's working, to change it up and make in-game adjustments. And that's solely on the coaches because players are pretty robotic. I mean, no, just let me finish. Like players are pretty robotic and they're generally like, these guys are, you know, they know what they know. And so the reality is, didn't we ask that? Didn't someone, Donnie Boy's asking if Ezzy blow dries his beard, but I don't blow dry the beard either,
but I do put shampoo in the beard.
Yes. Yes.
But someone asked that question yesterday. Living in it. Like yes. Peter Griffin on Family Guy.
Anyways, the point is that it really is on Paul Maurice and his coaching staff. I mean, and he'll sometimes take the slings and arrows and say, oh, that was on me for not having my team prepared. And we should have been prepared like he did for the Carolina game. And fine, he can say that. And it sounds great. It's a good soundbite. And he takes the weight off the team, even though the players are the ones you were supposed to execute. But at the end of the day, like I said, if you can't figure out how to adjust in game to some of the things that teams aren't allowing you to do, well, that's solely on the coaching staff. And if you're still finding a lack of success, well, then like I said, you either adjust, you know, what's the expression, adapt or die. So, I mean, that's kind of what the Jets coaching staff has to do because look, now you're going to have adversity. You're going to have a coaching decision. I mean, a decision made up for you, regardless of how you would do it, because obviously Blake Wheeler is not going to be available for the next little while. And so unless he does like a, you know, Undertaker style rising from the dead.
Willis Reed, if you want to go back to the 1970s New York Knicks coming back on the court after looking like he's out of the playoff series.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, and the truth is, it just means that there's going to have to be more on the, because he had one goal and 11 assists in his last seven games. And he looked more Wheeler-esque in the last little bit than he had previously. And so you're going to have to find someone who's going to do that. And again, we've talked about it. There are guys in this organization who, if given the opportunity, you know, whether it's a Jansen Harkins, whether it's a Evgeny Svechnikov, like why Toninato and Svechnikov like to me, it's inexplicable. Okay. You're in a game. I'm just saying it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You're in a game. That's a tight game. You played the night before. It wasn't a terribly taxing game in Seattle. And you essentially used nine players because once Blake Wheeler, I mean, it was the third period, but still like you're down to three lines. Mm-hmm. And remarkably, I mean, and it goes to show you, I guess, the conditioning of these guys, but like they look good in the overtime.
You don't think they had frosted mini wheats?
I don't think they had frosted mini wheats at 1 o'clock in the morning. But the
just
point
bio is, steal, I think.
But the point is that to not use Toninato, to not use Svechnikov with, you know, I mean, like I said, to give those hang 3 minutes and what was it? 3 minutes and 45 seconds for Svechnikov and like 7 minutes for
3:59 for Svechnikov.
Yeah. And seven something for Toninato. I just don't understand it because it's not as if you can hang something on them and say they're the reason the Jets were losing. So for me, at least I maybe someone in the chat would remember something otherwise, but I don't recall anything that those two did individually that were negative towards the team. So, I mean, to me, it's just that's a question mark for the coaching staff. Why would you choose to hamstring yourself when you're playing a back-to-back? And not only that, like, I get that you have 2 days off, like you're traveling today, you're off tomorrow. So you could quote empty the tank last night, but I still just don't understand why, if you have, you know, two guns in your holster, why you're leaving one behind and you're only taking one out. It just doesn't make a lot
of
sense.
And they were playing well. Like, we talked about that on the post-game show, right, Dave? Like, you know, if the fourth line was having some bad shifts, and we still don't really know what happened specifically with Svechnikov, because, you know, Drew, we got to give Drew credit. He noticed that. I mean, Dave and I were just, you know, I guess sleeping at the wheel, but, I mean, he did something that ticked Maurice off. But, you know, Toninato, I mean, we had him on back in September, and we've talked about him many times over the years. Like, he is... No, he's having a great year. Like, you know, you look at the goals and he's only got three goals, but I mean, nobody was expecting Dominic Toninato to score 20 goals. Like, he's not playing that much, right? And you know, even if he's not playing a lot on the penalty kill, like he wasn't yesterday, I mean, he has been good when he's been out on that, mainly that second PK unit, right, Dave? So, I mean, that's what's even more puzzling about it is that, like, look, it's Captain Obvious to say, you know, the game, the Jets are down, you know, a goal for the most of the game, right? Except for, you know, kind of midway through the second period. So it's easy to say, okay, well, the game was tied. So, you know, Maurice is, as we know, he likes to kind of, you know, shorten the bench, go with the three lines when they're trying to get the game-winning goal. But, like, to me, that's not the best strategy. I've never liked that strategy.
That's something you do in the latter half, I would say, of the third period, you know, when you're pushing for a tying goal.
Exactly. Especially not in the latter half of the second period.
The second half of a back-to-back. I mean, a lot of that was curious. Let's head to break. We're going to be joined by Jeff Hamilton coming up on the other side. Hammer is in the Hammer, that being Hamilton, Ontario. He's going to join us to talk about the Jets and, of course, talk a little bit about the upcoming Grey Cup. Much more to come. Stay with us. You're watching, you're listening, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pleased to be joined now by our good friend Jeff Hammer Hamilton, live in Hamilton. And Hammer, I gotta say, what happens when the Hammer visits the Hammer? Is it like there's a welcoming parade for you? Is it like the Nexus of the Universe on Seinfeld? I just need to know what it's like. You know, it was like when Amelie Benjamin, who used to cover the Boston Bruins, maybe she still does, visited Amelie Arena in Tampa Bay. I imagine it's just sort of chaos all around you and you're a little unmoored as a human being.
Yeah, it's even more than usual, right? I tell people here that the city's named after my great-great-grandfather. You know, that's, you know, I've actually said that this week a couple different times. It hasn't really worked, but yeah, nothing special. It's funny. I always tell the story about, you know, I always tell the story about, you know, when I check into hotels or I do certain things, you know, I say, okay, Jeff Hamilton liked the city. And then I visited Hamilton and didn't have a great experience. So then I started saying Hamilton like the musical, the Broadway musical. Now that I'm back here for a week, Hamilton's been nothing but amazing. Guys, it is plus 14 today. It feels
what?
I was wiping sweat off my face earlier because I'm wearing a sweater. So I'm all about Hamilton. It's going back. Hamilton from Hamilton, like the city, like the beautiful city that it is. Grey Cup week is not disappointed. Hamilton's been awesome, host.
Well, hopefully there won't be a sighting of Aaron Burr to ruin your experience in Hamilton, the city, as the Bombers, of course, will do battle against the Tiger Cats in tomorrow's Grey Cup. And we'll touch on that maybe a little bit in the interview as well. But, Jeff, we brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, because that, of course, will be certainly a focus of your attention once the Bombers season wraps up in the next few days or so. You know, sure. The Jets now, you know, they finished the two-game road trip with a, you know, a 1-0-1 record, a good win in Seattle, a hard-fought defeat in Vancouver last night in the shootout, but all the focus will now be on the injury to Blake Wheeler, who you know, really looked like he played his best game of the year yesterday and then goes down with what Paul Maurice termed to be not a short-term injury. No more details available than that at this point in time. You know, how do you think the Jets are going to be able to handle the Wheeler injury? We know Blake Wheeler isn't the same player he was 3-4 years ago, but Paul Maurice in particular relies so very much on the Jets captain still.
Yeah, I think it's you know, it's first of all, it's obviously a lot of bad luck for Wheeler in the sense that, you know, you're celebrating your 1,000th game, not far off. Like you said, Drew, best game he's had all season. I mean, he looked kind of like vintage Blake Wheeler, like, you know, the scoring opportunities, actually scored. So he finally got out of that, you know, snide. And so, you know, certainly disappointing for, you know, him and his teammates. You know, you heard it afterwards. I mean, you know, it's bad. You know what I mean? Coaches don't say what Paul Maurice said last night. if it's not like super bad. Like it's not like a week or two. This is a guy who's going to be out for some time. You know, I'm not going to speculate, but obviously, you know, knees have, you know, there's a lot of options when it comes to knees and a lot of bad options. So we'll wait and figure that one out. But you know what? I don't want to sit here and say, okay, this is, you know, salt to the wound, but I mean, everyone's been asking for this. You know, everyone's been asking for not him to be out of the lineup, but a decreased role. So if he's going to be out long-term, of course you're going to want Blake Wheeler in the lineup, but all those, you know, all those different combinations, all those different looks that you've had, all, you know, the narrative has been, you know, where is Blake Wheeler in the lineup right now? Right. And it's been, he's been up top. He's been on that top line. And the question's been, should he be there? Well, you know, this is an unfortunate situation, but we're going back to what we were, what the Jets were doing earlier in the season without Blake Wheeler. So like, are they going to survive? I don't see why they wouldn't. I think you're going to get an opportunity here to try out different combinations. Maybe Svechnikov goes back up with that line, maybe not, but you know, that whole forcing Blake Wheeler or whatever, you know, word you want to use to play with Mark Scheifele. Well, maybe this is, again, maybe this is an opportunity to see different looks and not and force Paul Maurice's hand, if you will, right? Because that's what happened earlier in the season. He had his hand forced, and we saw, you know, some good things come out of that, including that line with Svechnikov and Dubois and Kyle Connor. So maybe they get reunited. I guess the point in all that, and to answer the question, is they've done this before, and I believe they can do it again. And maybe a little bit of adversity here is what this team needs, because like I said, what it sounded like last night is this isn't going to be a 1-2 week thing. It's going to be a foreseeable future thing. So whether they're ready or not, I think it's going to be, they're going to be forced to give different looks because you have a guy out of your top line right now. So
Hammer, Drew mentioned, you know, you're in Hamilton and your focus has been on the Bombers and you're absolutely killing it this week with your coverage.
14 degrees.
Unbelievable. Yeah, there's a little bit of a difference here. I think it's, I don't know, minus 10 or something here. But
like in Palm Springs. the fire in Dave's picture is making me sweat.
Looking good. I mean, you've obviously got the beautiful tan going, so we're very jealous about that. Definitely
don't have to go to Fabby Tan. I'll let you ask your question.
I was going to say, can't Teddy Wyman come in and start fanning you off?
No, he's grabbing grapes right now to feed me later off screen.
Yeah, so you need to do another cup of coffee too, right? Yeah. Teddy, get on it.
Teddy's a whole other story. Sorry, Ed,
stepping back for a second, you know, we were talking about it, you know, 5 or 10 minutes before you came on here this morning, you know, just looking at the Jets after 27 games kind of at a macro level, and obviously, you know, they're not where they want to be at this, they're not, you know, where they thought they would be maybe at this point in the season, right? Like they're battling the Vegas Golden Knights for a wild card spot. And we're obviously, you know, a long time away from the playoffs. We're not even halfway through the season. But like when you watch this team on a nightly basis, and obviously you have covering it, you know, for the Free Press, not necessarily, you know, the road trip because Mike's there. But, you know, is this a team that it's as simple as they haven't been consistent enough? Because I think everybody knows, you know, in especially against, you know, the Wild when they lost 7-1 or when they lost 2-0 to the Hurricanes. Like, they've looked different when they beat the Oilers versus, you know, when they lose to the Islanders or they lose to the Hurricanes. But, like, is there something stylistically you see? Because for me, it's that the Jets sometimes have been unable to adapt against a really good defensive team, and you know they've had trouble kind of busting through that wall, right? So What's kind of your take here after 27?
You know, it's interesting, right? Because 27 games is, it's not a lot of games, you know what I mean? But it's also, you know, we're looking at more than a, you know, a third into the season here and edging up towards halfway, right, at 40. So, you know, it's a good point in the season to evaluate. And I think we don't really have any answers. And my theory in all this is, you know, whether you want to go with consistency, there's certainly an argument there, right? I mean, this team has ridden the highs and lows all season long, you know, and it's just been like, it's just when they're rolling, everything's great. The guys are talkative, guys are whatever, right? Life is good. When they're not, it's like life is horrible. We haven't really seen that middle ground where it's like, okay, you know, bad game and get back on track. It's either they're rolling or they're not. And part of that to me is that it's kind of creeping back into what they used to be like, where they would ride the highs and lows of the season, right? They wouldn't be able to, I don't want to say weather them, but like, it just, there seems to be a little bit of fragility with this lineup where that if things don't go right, you know, it's, you know, you try to stay positive, but you can kind of feel those kind of cracks in the armor. I also think it's a big part of that is, I think a big part of that is also the fact that these, the lineup has changed so often. The defense has remained the same. So they've kind of, you know, whatever. Connor Hellebuck has been incredibly consistent this year. It's the forwards group. And so, you know, it's just things haven't been clicking, you know, consistently enough. And therefore things move. Like Paul Maurice is just so quick to shake up the lineup, to do, you know, see different looks and all these things that I just feel like you don't really know what the optimal lineup is right now. You don't know. And I, you know, and whether game 27 is where you want to be, like, you know what, when you look at the playoffs, you know, probably not, you're fine. There's lots of time here, but it just feels like there's been so many moving pieces and the moving pieces have kind of resulted in up and down results. And so I still feel like there's almost a search here for this team, whether it's Paul Maurice or just in general, to find that group. Again, the good news is you're not exactly where you want to be in the standings. You're not out of it. You're hovering that line, but you're a strong 2 weeks away from being top in your division. So it's, you know, to me, it's one of those things where, yes, I think they're still trying to figure things out, but they have time. It's just when you look back at the 27 games, you could probably look at, it feels like 20 different lineups. So to me, I feel like they're still trying to figure things out. They're still trying to find out what their jam is. Obviously the Wheeler being out is going to throw a wrench in that, but it's just, you know, I just feel like more consistency in the lineup, finding that, because when you play with different guys every game or every couple games, or even in some cases within, you know, in game, I just feel like, you know, you're not finding that consistency. You're not finding that rhythm. And we're going back to that again, like kind of riding the highs and lows. But some guys, like Kyle Connor's been consistent all season. Other guys haven't been. So it's like almost like back to that, you know, thing where one line's rolling, then the next line's rolling, and those two top six lines aren't consistently rolling on the same night. And until that happens, you're going to get these kind of mixed results, in my opinion. But we'll see. I think, you know, like, I think there's a good opportunity here to come home this week, you know, lay some wins down. You had a good road trip here. Bad news with Blake Wheeler, but at the same time, this team's talented enough that I think their expectations need to be higher. It's just, you know, you need to find that consistency in the lineup to get that consistency on the ice.
Jeff Hamilton is our guest Saturday morning. You're watching, you're chatting, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jeff is joining us from the tropical island known as Hamilton, Ontario.
Seriously, guys.
This is amazing. Who would think that on December 11th, Jeff would be wiping his brow because he's sweating in Hamilton? It's unbelievable.
It might be that he's nervous being on with us. It might be the sun. It might be chalking it up.
Where's Ted? We need a cold drink for Hammer. We need a lemonade or something.
Last night too. There's a whole bunch of factors, guys, that goes into the sweats.
And is that sweat or is that booze pouring out of you?
You can see. You can't see the sun, but you can see it reflect off my face. I promise you. Google it. It's unbelievable.
We believe you, Jeff.
As long as it's not the meat sweats. I get those quite often. It's not fun.
Ezzy gets the cereal sweats too. So, I mean, you got to, with Ezzy, it's all sorts of things. Yeah. You know, Jeff, you know, you talk about consistency and you mentioned it just quickly just now in your answer. And one of the players who just has become the driver of this Jets team is Kyle Connor. And it, to me, it's remarkable because, you know, we always talk about how he's underappreciated in all markets and how everybody in Winnipeg knows what he does. But I mean, even for folks who have watched him as much as we have, I mean, it's so clear as day that he has become the number one driver for this Jets team. What do you see different in Kyle Connor's game that has allowed him to get to that next level where he drives the Dubois line or he drives the Scheifele line? And it is the Kyle Connor show more than anybody else on this team right now.
You know, for me, I think he's just a weapon in so many different places on the ice. Like, you know, when he gets a burst of speed, his shot needs to be respected. You know, when you know, he's got the speed, obviously, to score breakaway goals. He's got the hands to deke out goalies, but he's also got that shot, you know, whether it's a one-timer, whether it's, you know, rushing up the boards and, you know, shooting on the fly. Like, he needs to be respected. And when you need to be respected by defensemen and a goaltender, it frees up other guys. So, like, when we think about driving, yes, he's got play. We've seen some really incredible stuff where he's handled the puck, like Nick Ehlers can handle the puck and, you know, in the offensive zone and kind of play keep away. So he's got the talent. But when you are forced to play against him or to, you know, to draw attention, to respect shots, because not everybody has that. You know what I mean? There's goalies in the scouting reports where, you know, obviously you're ready for the save, but you need to respect him. So when he makes a move, like, how many times have we seen it where he'll drive the net and all of a sudden, you know, it'll be a shot from the side, but the goalie has to square up against him, and all of a sudden Pierre-Luc Dubois is smacking one in, or someone around the net is smacking one in. And I think we're seeing this real transition of a driver, right? That not only does he have the skill set, Kyle Connor has come into his own in the last 2 years, and as far as confidence, as far as how he, you know, and I'm not saying that how you speak to reporters is, you know, is indicative of your play on the ice, but you can see it. Like, he's a really guarded guy. And now you can see that kind of, you know, freedom almost with him. You know, like he feels like he, you know, I'm not gonna say he didn't feel like he belonged before, but you can tell he feels like a leader on this team. And, you know, and he's always had the stats. And what we're watching here is a transition from, you know, essentially years ago when Blake Wheeler went to Paul Maurice and said, put the kid on our line, you know, let's see what he can do. And he was routinely scoring 30 plus goals. Well, now it's the other way around. It's put Kyle Connor on that line to get Blake Wheeler going. And that's exactly what you wanted when you signed him to the deal you signed him to. You know what I mean? Like he's a cheaper guy. Like, he's not cheap, but he's not, you know, given what we're seeing from him and the ability to put a, you know, whether he's playing with Pierre-Luc Dubois, like let's, you know, rewind a little bit here earlier in the season. Pierre-Luc Dubois came into this year with high expectations, and all credit to him. Great offseason, you know, has certainly improved his play, but he's got to look at number 81 as far as why he's gotten to his game, and his confidence is up. So Kyle Connor's gone from that guy who, yes, he's been dangerous around the net. That's a skill set that he has. I talked to one of his shooting coaches. His name's getting by me right now, but I'll never forget what he told me. I actually called to talk about Patrick Laine a couple of years ago, and he said to me, hey, you might want to keep an eye on Kyle Connor. I go, why is that? He goes, because I don't know anybody who loves scoring more. And so he's always been key around the net. But this now he's his comfort level and his maturity and his age right now, he's coming into his prime, where if you're the Winnipeg Jets organization, how can you not be just over the moon with how he's, you know, established himself and carried lines? Because we haven't even seen that from Mark Scheifele at certain points, even with the points that Mark's had in the past. What we're seeing from Kyle Connor is the points, not only the points, but the dominance, and the dominance to bring guys with you and make them better. And, you know, the fact that you have him playing that role in a group of forwards where you think that three or four or five other guys could do the same thing, it's just been, you know, an incredible development for him, and certainly living up to all the opportunity. And that's a big thing here, guys, right? Like, right from the beginning, you excel, you take advantage of that opportunity, you're going to get more. And this is a guy who's just a prime example of that.
Jeff, who replaces Wheeler? Is it as simple as moving Stastny up to that spot? Or would you rather see Stastny sort of stay in the role that he's been in, and maybe you elevate one of the younger guys to try and maybe balance out the scoring on your three lines, as opposed to loading up the top six? Could you see a guy like Veselainen getting that opportunity, or Svechnikov, who was effective earlier in the year but has been in the doghouse, certainly when last night's game was in the doghouse? Yeah. You know, which way would you see, do you think it's going to go?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if you go back to when Blake Wheeler was out of the lineup and Mark Scheifele was out of the lineup, like, why wouldn't you go back to that lineup, right? You know, sure. Why wouldn't you go? I mean, whether Svechnikov's in the doghouse or not, or, you know, style of game, I mean, that does force you to, you know, juggle those two lines completely, but it also puts Mark Scheifele back with Nick Ehlers. So, you know, maybe there's an opportunity there. I wouldn't rule it out. Paul Maurice has a history of going back to things that worked, you know, and I remember being in Edmonton and him telling me that he had a lot of time for that line, and two games later, they were gone. And everyone was saying, well, what happened here? You know, it went back and then the snide. So, like, the thing is I tend to think he would go back to that lineup, you know, because, you know, I just think that's it worked the first time. And now if it works again, I mean, there's really, you know, like, how do you not stick with it? So, I mean, I think there is an opportunity to plug and play with Stastny, but I, you know, if you're asking me, I think you go back to that line and you put Connor back with Dubois, you know what I mean? And see what happens, you know? And there's a lot of nights where that line was enough to carry the whole team. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I just, you know, with precedent there, I don't know how you don't at least go back to or try it here in this stretch. You're going to have the time to do it. So whether it's next game or, you know, in a few games. I just think that's ultimately the optimal lineup you have to go with.
Yeah, I think most of us here agree with you, Hammer, because it also just not only, you know, can you depend on that line, but it also kind of gets Svechnikov out of the doghouse, right? Like, he just
puts him in a position where he can succeed. Like, this whole idea that, like, you know, this argument that Svechnikov's a top six player, I'm not going to make that argument. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. He's certainly capable of playing on that line, you know? So why wouldn't you use that, right? Especially if you're burying him down in the lineup and you're not getting those results. Well, you've seen those results before. He obviously has a chemistry with Dubois. Kyle Connor's making everybody look good. And go back to a normal NHL team that doesn't put their best three players or their perceived best three players on one line. So, I don't know. To me, it just seems like common sense. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Jeff, what did you think of the overturned call? Because, obviously, in the Carolina game, you know, I wasn't on the post-game show, wasn't watching that game live, but obviously, you know, the Jets fans, you know, they wanted that goaltender interference call on Sebastian Aho. And then obviously, you know, everybody has seen, you know, Paul Maurice and the, you know, the nice words that he likes to use after.
That just replaced the new gifts, right?
Absolutely.
A one-up right, himself.
Yeah, it's been a few years, so he needed to give us some new material, right? But, you know,
anything to replace the waving Maurice gif, anything at all to replace that.
Basically, that won't be replaced.
Yeah. I know. What is goalie interference? And, you know, did they get it right last night? Because as Andrew Kopp, you know, Dave talked about it on the post-game show. Yeah. Kopp mentioned, like, just because, you know, Thatcher Demko didn't have an opportunity to go across and make the save, you still can't, you know, interfere with the goalie. But, like, how big of a problem is this right now? Because it does seem like you're seeing players not just on the Jets but across the league really scratching their head and wondering, like, you know, what is actually going to be called goaltender interference and what isn't.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as you mentioned, Andrew Kopp speaking last night, I mean, he didn't have a problem with the no call. He had a problem with the no call in relation to what happened against the Jets and against Carolina. So, it's not like he was saying, you know, what, you know, they shouldn't have, it should have been a goal. I'm sure he obviously wanted it to be a goal. But it's just finding that consistency. And I think one of the issues with the NHL, and it's not just the NHL, right? I mean, the NFL's had problems with replays. Every league has problems with consistency and calls. You know,
was it a catch in the West final last week?
Yeah, exactly. You know, CFL has, you know, all these things that happen. It's just the problem is you don't really get a really good explanation. You know what I mean? Like, and you can use some of the verbiage in the calls. Like, you know, we get the emails that break it down and you kind of go, well, you could apply that verbiage to this other goal, right? And it just seems like, I don't know. So how do you fix it or how do you get more consistency to it? I'm a real proponent in, you know, there's some things where you need to make a decision on whether he was disrupted. And I mean, that one's kind of on the line because yes, there's contact there, you know, but is he going to make the save? You know what I mean? Is it not just, you know, and if that's the case, maybe even that's more subjective. So maybe I'm just making it worse. But I find a lot of these things where it's like, you know, there is a reason why you can't get in the crease. You need to be careful about those things, you know, and I just find that, you know, in a lot of these instances, you don't get the justification that really makes a whole lot of sense. And you also don't, when you look at the goalie's position, you go, well, I don't think he's making that save anyways. And so, you know, it's kind of almost like a last ditch effort. And I understood the frustration, but I also get the challenge because, you know, that's, you can't do that. Like, you can't touch
the goalie. Key point in the game, right?
Key point in the game, of course. So we've been talking about this for a while and I just don't know how you find the consistency. And I think, and the reality is too, is you're going to have very different opinions depending on what side you're on. So the Canucks aren't saying that this is the problem. You know what I mean? That, you know, it's really whoever it's against. So I don't know. I find one of those things where it's almost impossible to find consistency when you're making judgment calls like this. And there's varying factors, but it's just unfortunate when, they, you know, kind of things like this decide games and you're, and that's my issue, is that you're breaking down the smallest things. Like if the referee isn't calling it at live in action, then you're going back to the minute details of a replay. And I don't know.
No, you're right, Hammer. There's definitely, I think we all agree. And most of the people watching or listening on the podcast would agree. There's too much gray area right now with goalie interference.
There's not enough gray matter in this room though. That's not an issue.
No problem with that.
You're on mute, Dave. Speaking of gray matter.
Darn. Sorry, I was trying to do two things. You know, Jeff, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is Paul Maurice and the coaching staff. And we talk about adjusting all the time, but you know, look, Blake Wheeler potentially being out for a while is gonna hurt this team. But the reality is, this is a team that's spent to the cap. It's also a team that's been remarkably healthy, right? Obviously, you had the issues with COVID with Wheeler and Scheifele. But for the most part, I mean, I don't remember a season, obviously, with Neil Pionk. We don't know his status because obviously his suspension is done, but he's in concussion protocol. So we'll find out on Monday what's up with him. But they've been remarkably healthy back end. And so from a, you know, a coaching staff's perspective, they like, it really is on Paul Maurice. They've spent to the cap. You know, this they've done everything they need to. They adjusted, they made their defense better. They've had the consistency. So how hot does the seat become for Paul Maurice, and how important is his ability to adjust in season to a potential loss of Blake Wheeler for a long time? Simply because, again, the GM has done everything you needed to do to get your team to that next level to be a quote optimum, you know, Stanley Cup contender.
Well, you know, Dave, this was the first year during that slide of 6 losses in 7 games where I honestly thought for the first time in his tenure that there was potential for him to be fired. Because of all those reasons you mentioned, there is no margin for error when you spend the cap, when you address certain issues. You know, we've talked about this forever, where it comes down to, you know, these were the quote unquote excuses. The defense wasn't good enough for a couple of years. You know, okay, so you fix that. You're getting the exact goaltending that you've expected from Connor Hellebuck. You have top end forwards. Guys are having career years like Kyle Connor. Obviously, they faced some adversity early on with COVID and Mark Scheifele being out and Blake Wheeler, and now Blake Wheeler being out again. I don't think Blake Wheeler being out is enough of an excuse. So, you know, whether, you know, he's going to have to weather the storm in it. And the thing is with Paul Maurice, I think, you know, and obviously the frustration with fans is, you know, some of the lineup decisions, it's like that in every market. Where he's really good is, you know, being a player's coach, right? Being a guy who can, you know, make, you know, bring a guy along and run a room, right? And Blake Wheeler is the guy that runs the room for him. So that's going to be an element of this. Maybe, you know, so I really do think that, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say the seat is extremely hot, but the seat's capable of getting extremely hot this season, regardless of what happened with 26 last game. So, you know, for me, this you can't hover around the playoff line. The reality with this market is Paul Maurice will need to be, you know, something drastic will need to be happening. Like, this team will need to be like 8 or 10 points out of a playoff spot for the Jets to be forced. I feel like forced to fire him, you know. So I think that the hand needs to be forced. We all know the loyalty that goes into you know, the True North organization. We know that Paul Maurice, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff, Mark Chipman are somewhat similar to the Wade Miller, Kyle Walters, Mike O'Shea, and that, you know, the level of decision making process is not distributed the same way as other you know, other teams. So, like, you know, they're all in it together. So to have a guy that you're loyal to have a guy that you know, rely on heavily in decision making to replace him, you better have somebody, you know, out there. And when I mentioned kind of that stretch there with the hot seat earlier in the season, I thought a guy like Bruce Boudreau would have been not a bad option for the Winnipeg Jets. Now he's gone. So, you know, again, I'm not saying that his hiring in Vancouver has all of a sudden made, you know, Paul Maurice's job safer. I'm just suggesting that if you're going to bring somebody in, you know, you got to bring an established guy here. Like, you know, you're not giving, you know, and you got to bring in a guy that's going to want to work under the conditions in Winnipeg, is going to fit the culture and all those things with the organizational structure of it all. And I just feel like there's so many moving parts in that actually saves Paul Maurice probably more than it should. And the reality is Paul Maurice is the second longest tenured coach to John Cooper. So the excuses kind of run out. Everybody else, why are the Winnipeg Jets any different than every other organization but Tampa Bay when it comes to changing, you know, things? And if you're not getting the results, I mean, you can't live and die off a long playoff run a couple of years ago. You know, we were talking about it last night about the Jets, you know, how impressive it was to sweep the Edmonton Oilers and then to get swept by the Canadiens the next series. It just went from, whoa, this team, maybe they are better than we thought, to, wow, hockey's weird. You know, like, and it just kind of took away everything that they did. So to me, like, it's great that you have a guy who's, you know, a genuinely good human being, Paul Maurice. There's no doubt about it. Certainly a good quote, But it gets to a point in time where middling results just aren't good enough when your roster suggests you should be, you know, significantly better. So, you know, I do think as time goes on, I think his seat will get warmer and warmer and warmer. I just don't know how long you can keep doing the same thing without results. So as much as you know, they are talented, they could, you know, do damage this season. If, you know, I might make predictions, but if you're out the first round of the series, like, I mean, this is just the same story, you know, and especially with this year, you have to think that he feels a little bit more pressure given who he has at his disposal, given how much they've spent. But I just love to be a fly on the wall in True North's, you know, offices when things aren't going well. Do they even go there? Do they even, like, has it ever been suggested, you know? Because there's been one time, and it was after that, what game was that, the Arizona loss, where it was the first time I felt like Paul Maurice wasn't 100% sure about his job security. And this is just a gut feeling, you know, but it just, he looked defeated. And we've seen a lot of up and downs. We've seen a lot of disappointments, you know, with this team. We've obviously seen some successes, but I'd never seen that kind of defeated look from Paul Maurice, who is a guy that will have a game where everyone will be like, that was a horrible game. And he's saying, this is the best hockey we've been playing. And so, you know, again, I think the seat's just going to naturally get hotter, because at the end of the day, when you have a coach here for that long, like we've seen Paul Maurice, I mean, the Jets don't owe him anything, you know, like they've given him a massive opportunity here. It's been Claude Noel and Paul Maurice. Like, we're at a stage now where there's people who probably don't even remember Claude Noel. So, like,
how could you forget?
Yeah, totally. Pizzas. But
three,
like,
pizzas.
Exactly.
No joy in Joyland?
He had some great ones. We've had two very loquacious coaches in the time that the Jets have been back in Winnipeg. Jeff Hamilton is at the Bombers walkthrough. I understand the media availability is getting underway momentarily.
Getting close.
Hammer, we'll let you go. We appreciate your time. It's going to be a huge game tomorrow between the Bombers and the Ticats. You can read all of Jeff's work and the great coverage the Free Press is providing in the Winnipeg Free
Get yourself
Press.
A lemonade, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm going to. I got a water right here. Thanks for having me on, guys. Always appreciate it. And I'm going to go outside in my sweater and take in some of this weather. It's amazing.
We'll do it again real soon. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it, buddy.
See you guys.
Thanks, Hammer. Jeff Hamilton joining us from Hamilton, Ontario site.
Balmy Hamilton.
Tomorrow night's Grey Cup between the Bombers and the Ticats. No word if Mr. Ginsburg is going to give a Ginsburg guarantee before the show is over.
Well, I'll give a guarantee that the Ticats win.
For those
who don't know, you know what that means, I mean, we're all diehard Bombers fans. That means I'm actually picking the opposite team, because I'm obviously Costanza, so I'm picking the Ticats, but really we're obviously picking the blue and gold.
Heart is with the Bombers. It'll be a great game tomorrow between, it's sort of a complete role reversal between from 2 years ago, where the Tiger Cats were the regular season juggernaut and the Bombers were the team that got hot late in the season and into the playoffs. This year, the Bombers have been the regular season juggernaut and the Ticats got hot, winning the two games to get to the Grey Cup. We'll see what happens. 5 o'clock is kickoff tomorrow, and then the party will go potentially, hopefully, into the wee hours of, you know, I don't know, 10 o'clock, 11, something like that. It doesn't matter.
At your house.
Not in my house. The party will go to the wee hours about 9 o'clock in my house. So let's be serious. I got the season finale of Succession to watch at some point tomorrow night as well.
Okay, that's enough.
Okay. Before we go to break, on a bit of a serious note, everybody in the chat, everybody that's watching, everybody that's listening to this knows about my ties to Kentucky and my family being in Kentucky and Laura's family being in Kentucky. There was a horrendous tornado in Kentucky, in Western Kentucky, last night, that's caused a tremendous loss of life, tremendous damage, reports of upwards of maybe 100 people lost their life. The community of Mayfield, Kentucky, which is in Western Kentucky, has been completely destroyed by what sounds like might very well be an F5 tornado, which is the highest category of tornado. So I just wanted to, you know, send my love. I know we have some fans of the show who are in Kentucky. They've been in touch with me. There's Jets fans everywhere, including Kentucky. So I wanted to send my love to everybody affected and all my family in Kentucky, devastated by the events last night. So, you know, our thoughts are with you as you try and stay safe and try and rebuild and everything else along those lines. When we come back, more on the Winnipeg Jets. Marty Biron going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Stay with us. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Alrighty, hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on our YouTube channel, on our Facebook page, on our Twitter feed, and of course the podcast available afterwards. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, leave us comments on both, tell your friends and family. Maybe you have some diehard Jets fans who aren't aware that we're doing what we're doing here on the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. Hard to believe that.
What are we doing, by the way?
We're doing.
What is this, Drew? Who are we?
Clearly what we're doing. It's hard to believe that it's possible that they might not know about us, but if they don't, it's not entirely impossible. Tell them. Be our voice in the public, because I try not to leave my house. That's what we ask of you each and every Saturday morning. And when we go live with the
Dave and I go out in public for you, Drew.
It's true. You guys are the social
butterfly. Yeah, I'm pretty sure the only public I go to is Canada Life Center and then back.
And yoga public.
Yeah, exactly right. I wanted to read a quote from you guys. This came from Murat's article in The Athletic, but I think Mike also wrote about it in the Winnipeg Free Press about the Jets penalty kill, because we know the penalty kill has certainly been a hot topic of discussion really for the entirety of the season, given how terrible it's been. It's been better the last two games. The Jets have managed to go two straight games not giving up a power play goal, which is hard to believe for this team when they've been giving up two a game, basically. Brendan Dillon says, we had a pretty honest meeting this morning about where we're at. That was before the Kraken game. We're the worst PK in the league, pretty much. We've got to take some pride in that. In our room, we're prideful guys, and we know we expect a lot better of ourselves. Here's Kyle Connor. We took a look today,
kind of made some adjustments, wanted to be more aggressive. You could see that today, trying to get top down pressure all over the ice and not getting to the case where you're pushing them down and then back off, giving them time and space. As a power play, we know how tough that is. Carolina did that so well against us the other night. Here's Paul Maurice. We just feel there's basically three pieces to this. There's a structural component that we needed to almost get away from. We were in structure almost too much. There's an individual component, like those clears got to get down the ice, right? And then there's the confidence and support on the ice in terms of positioning on the ice. So we just wanted to really fill those buckets with ideas. If we're going to do this in this situation, let's get really aggressive with our kill.
And I have a quote from Andrew Kopp. There's no doubt that our penalty kill has to be better. We must strive to be a bet. I'm joking.
My question is,
5 minutes of quotes there, Drew.
Well, I mean, like, what, it's not my fault the quotes were so loquacious, as he, you know,
why you can only use that word once. It diminishes the use of the word.
Why did it take 26 games to get to this point, though?
I have the answer, Drew. Actually know the answer. Because they didn't start watching the Illegal Curve hockey show until game 25 or 26.
Until after the Carolina game?
We were constantly harping about the lack of aggression on their PK, and they obviously tuned into the show and listened to it and said, those guys are making some good points. Maybe we need to be a little more aggressive. And you saw it. And again, you know, the Seattle power play isn't anything significant, but the Canucks, I think, were 17th going into yesterday's game or whatever. It was better than Seattle's, and they were able to hold them. And so that, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they perform against a top five power play unit. And I'm not sure, like, you know, I don't know off the top of my head whether I know Buffalo's won't be top five, but why, you know, there's always a possibility that the Capitals or Blues have a top power play. I would imagine one of them is probably in the top 10. So we'll see how they do against a better, you know, structured, a better, more talented power play unit. Or
St. Louis is three. St. Louis is tied for third with Dallas. Right. And they have the Stars, of course, the week after next. They have the Predators, who have the eighth ranked power play. That's coming up right after right after the Dallas game. And as it happens, the Washington Capitals power play is struggling in the bottom 10 of the league, which is unexpected. And the Sabres are actually better. They're 17th. So right around where Vancouver was last night.
Okay. So the truth is that you've got to see how you can handle with that kind of newfound aggression, which we've talked about, right? Being passive wasn't, you know, leading to success, and trying the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result wasn't working for this team. So, you know, and I think it was a Jeff O'Neill on our show who came on and said, you know, your best penalty killer has to be your goaltender. And that's with this team, Connor Hellebuyck always has to be the best.
I'm pretty sure, Dave, that has been said thousands of times for the last 100
years. You're saying that it's not.
Let's credit O-Dog, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're telling me that you want to tell Jeff O'Neill that it's not. You stole Jeff O'Neill too, Kezzy. So be careful what you're saying about the O-Dog. But I think it becomes a function of, you know, we're seeing them try something different because they knew, like, you're just not going to cut it. You know, we've talked about it, I don't know how many times already. You don't need to have a top five power player penalty killing unit to win in the Stanley Cup. That's been proven. But you also can't have an abysmal penalty kill or an abysmal power play. And the Jets penalty kill was abysmal. I mean, 31st overall. And I get the fact that, you know, they dug themselves that early grave with the way they played early in the season, and that, you know, they were never going to get to a top 10. But like I said, they can get back to the middle. And that's the most important thing, because you lose just too much momentum when you're giving up goals on the PK. And so to me, that's one of the areas they needed to change. And so we, you know, the one word we've used throughout the course of the show already, Drew, is that word consistent. So if the Jets can keep that consistency in their penalty kill and maintain what they're doing, and why wouldn't you? I mean, hockey players are creatures of habit. You're having success doing something. So if you're having success doing something, there's no reason to deviate from that which has made you successful.
And so, it's also, Dave, it's not personnel this year, right? Like in past years, you'd say, okay, well, maybe, you know, the Jets don't have, you know, the group of defensemen or the group of forwards to have an effective penalty kill. I mean, obviously, Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp have been staples. Those are your two best penalty killers. But, you know, that's not the case. Like we talked about, Logan Stanley, you know, Dylan DeMello, Brendan Dillon. I mean, the Jets have – a bunch of defensemen that can go out there and effectively kill penalties, and they have a bunch of forwards that can effectively kill penalties. Even if you're turning to Scheifele or you're turning to Connor, you also can use guys like Dominic Toninato, or you can use Paul Stastny or Jansen Harkins, right? So I think that's the biggest difference, Dave, that it's not necessarily the personnel as opposed to previous years that you're pointing to. You're pointing to systems and strategy, and Paul Maurice even used that a word, aggressive. And, you know, like, you have to continue to do that. Your penalty kill has to look the same, you know, whether or not it's the, you know, the 22nd ranked power play or the first ranked power play. Like, look at Edmonton and Toronto are 1-2. We just saw those. Like, I mean, the Oilers games were, I guess, almost a month ago now, but we just saw the Toronto power play. And obviously Austin Matthews can single-handedly just, you know, score a goal on the power play. But you're right, Dave, we want to see, you know, how they go up against the Capitals or the Blues, but you got to ride that. And that's something that I think, aside from the 3 points that you got over the last couple games, it's the penalty kill, especially in that game against the Kraken, right? Because the Kraken had those late power plays in the third period, mm-hmm. and the Jets were able to weather the storm. So I think you have to keep going with what you're doing and just try to be a little bit more aggressive, because there's only so many ways that you can play the penalty kill, right? Like, you want your goaltender to see the puck. You want to limit, you know, the amount of traffic that is in front of the goalie. And you obviously, you don't want to avoid those kind of odd man situations and not leave players wide open. But I think they have the guys, they have the soldiers here, you know, that they, as Dave said, their penalty kill can, you know, continue to be, you know, whatever you want to call it, top half of the league, top 10 in the league.
Well, you know, it's, what's interesting to me about the quotes that I rattled off there is that it's almost like the players themselves took the impetus to make the changes, like that the structure was there and they were playing within the structure, but then they decided, like, look, enough is enough. This structure is almost too structured. They were listening almost too well to what they were, quote unquote, supposed to do. And they decided to become a little bit more of a freelance. Now, it's not complete chaos, because I don't think complete chaos is going to work on a penalty kill. We sort of saw that last year, if you remember, with the Ottawa Senators. They had a PK that was completely void of structure. And while it was entertaining, it also came back to bite them. But it's like the players got together in the room and said, look, something needs to change here. And I don't know the answer to this, and I'm not expecting you guys to know the answer to it. But I'm curious, you know, was it the players leading the charge to changing things? Or was it more Reese sort of deferring to the players? Or, you know, how did the sausage get made that led to a more aggressive penalty kill being deployed?
Sausage.
I would suggest otherwise, Drew, because the whole point was that they were doing, you know, penalty kill video sessions, right? So they were specifically discussed. It wasn't as if the players said, okay, let's, you know, what did they lock Daryl Sutter out of the room and we'll have players only, we'll figure this out amongst ourselves because the coaching staff isn't getting it done. I would suspect that it was done within a video session specifically designated about the penalty kill. So I'm not suggesting that the players didn't have input and the ability to say, I mean, let's speak our mind and throw some things out there. And if you have ideas, you know, I mean, that's the best way, you know, businesses, organizations run, is when you're accepting of ideas from everyone within the organization,
bottom up as opposed to top down,
right? With the exception of a legal curve where we try and do things with, you know, yeah, the golden
no hierarchy
at the top.
At all.
Yeah, that's no. Right.
We're barely, so, you know, we're barely functioning as an organization.
So I would suggest that, you know, to me, they probably opened it up to ideas from the players and said, you know, you guys are on the ice. Is there things that, I mean, and that's just speculation on my part, but I don't think this is a player driven, solely player driven without the benefit of coaching involved. Yeah. I think the coaches would, like I said, maybe open it up and say, what is there something? But again, it's all speculation. It doesn't really matter. The reality is what you see on the ice, and what you see on the ice is a Jets team that's being more aggressive on the penalty kill. And it's something that they're going to need to maintain. And like I said, you'll see what they look like against the St. Louis. St. Louis has been decimated with injuries. It's amazing St. Louis has done what they've done, given the fact that they've used their fourth, fifth, sixth goaltender. Some nights they're playing with seven forwards, but yet they still continue to rattle off wins. So, you know, we'll...
The Jets play with 9 forwards most games anyways. What's the difference?
That's by choice, though, as opposed to by circumstance. But
right. But
the reality is that, you know, so I, you know, it's kind of like anything. You can say that St. Louis is, you know, power play is the third best, but that's the third best in over the course of the season. I don't know what it is right now based on all their circumstance. So, but regardless, you know, they do have a very effective players, and that's what it'll be a very curious thing to see. I mean, you know, the key is obviously not taking penalties, but you know, that's not likely. And so when you do, How do you react to them? And how can you maintain this within your system? And if you can, and you continue to incrementally get better and make your penalty go from 31st overall in the NHL to, you know, low 20s to maybe upper teens, now you've done something, because that could be the difference between a win and a loss and points in the standing banks and going home without any points.
Yeah, I mean, well said, Dave. I mean, it absolutely is the case that this Jets team needs to, you know, tighten up on those special teams, because that's really been the penalty kill, especially, has been the big bugaboo this year. I mean, if you have had a solid penalty kill from the start, there's probably a number of games that you ended up losing when you're giving up a goal or two goals per game that, you know, became games you are either more competitive in, or games that you earn a point in, or games that you maybe even win outright. So it'll be interesting to see how long this newfound success on the PK lasts. Because, I mean, you know, it's bizarre, because you remember last year, you know, they started again with the PK terribly, very, very poorly. And then they were able to turn it around sort of halfway through the season. And then for the latter half of the year is one of the better PKs in the league. So you wonder, you know, and going back to, I guess, almost the theme of today's show is the lack of consistency that this team has, where some days they look like world beaters and then some days they look like bottom feeders. And the Jets need to find that sort of happy balance between the two. Obviously, they would prefer it to be closer to world beaters than bottom feeders, but they need to get to that point where there's not as many vagaries in their game from shift to shift and from night to night.
Yeah, that's a good word too. Vagaries is a good word. I like that one.
I brought out my whole big vocabulary for today's show.
I like it. Well, I mean, you gotta bring out those words, right, Drew? And, you know, we talked about some of the upcoming games, right? Like Buffalo, obviously, you know, is not a world beater. But when you talk about, you know, Washington and St. Louis, I mean, these are teams that are going to be playoff teams. But the Jets are, it's going to be really interesting to see, like, as the month ends, right? Because you have the short three-game homestand, then you're going to have the back-to-backs just before Christmas, right, against Nashville and Dallas. And so you're going to have a little break, but then you come back and you've got Minnesota, who's obviously playing really well at the top of the Central Division, right? And then you've got Chicago, and then you've got Calgary. So, like, this isn't
before New Year's Eve. I mean, sorry, as you for interrupting. I mean, after Buffalo and Washington, you have, what is it, five straight division games? You know, St. Louis, Nashville, Dallas, Minnesota, right. Chicago. Five straight division games, and then Calgary. So from, you know, from after next Friday until New Year's Eve, it's all against the West, five out of six against your own division. This is a huge make or break time for the Winnipeg Jets when you look at their schedule, because really you know that in the second half of the schedule, if you're saying the second half is after New Year's Eve, you know, you haven't played Colorado yet, and Colorado puts up seven goals a game now. You know, they're looking like the Avalanche we expected them to look like. So, you know, the Jets have to look at the next, you know, 20 days as just an absolute key tipping point in how their season is going to go, you know, as you head into the start of 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Central Division we knew was going to be tight. I just don't think we expected it to be tight this way, with Colorado and the Jets a little bit further down, right? But there's no doubt. And, you know, you've got a back-to-back, but it's not, you know, the toughest in terms of the amount of games that you're playing, right? It's actually lighter than it has been earlier in December and late November here, guys. So, yeah, there's no doubt this is a key point in the season, not, you know, the way they wanted it to be, right? They'd like to be battling for first place in the division. They're hoping to get there. But, yeah, you've got some tougher matchups, right? Like, this isn't at the early part of the season when you can say, you know, you're playing the Ducks and you're playing the Sharks and you're playing some of those kind of lower talented teams in the Western Conference. But, you know, they have it in them. You know, the Wheeler injury hurts them, obviously. Not having Pionk in the lineup, you know, has hurt them. You know, last night, obviously, his suspension was over. And, you know, we have to wait and see if he's going to be available for Tuesday's game. But, you know, the Jets, aside from Wheeler and Pionk, I mean, they're healthy. So you're not going to use that as an excuse. And, you know, they've found success without Wheeler and Scheifele in the lineup. Other players, there's a lot of players on this team that can step up.
You know, Dave, to Ezzie's point, you know, there's something to be said for maybe some adversity being a good thing for a team to face, mm-hmm. you know, when it comes to injuries. You know, when you lose a guy like Wheeler, you obviously don't want to lose him. Your team is better off with him in the lineup than it is without him in the lineup. And I know even the Wheeler haters might not necessarily be able to acknowledge that, but that is a factual statement, a truthful statement. But, you know, it almost focuses you more. When you mm-hmm. have that adversity, you know exactly, you have to be more on point to succeed than when you have a full lineup and then when you're you know, you're able to sort of run your roster like you quote unquote would or should. So it'll be interesting to the, you know, you mentioned St. Louis, Dave, how they've been through the ringer when it comes to their injuries this year, and they've had COVID issues and injury issues and everything, yet they've been able to succeed. You wonder if the Jets are going to be able to emulate that. And I go back, this is a number of years now. Remember when the Jets had that incredible rash of injuries on their defense and they had to go out and they acquired Jay Harrison from the Carolina Hurricanes? I mean, how many years ago is that now? Probably 5-6 years ago, something like
seven
that.
Almost.
Maybe it's been, but they were able to overcome.
That was 2015.
There you go. So that's how many years ago it's been. They were able to overcome that tremendous rash of injuries on their back end and still succeed. So I want to see, can this Jets team keep their focus in this, in spite of the injury to Wheeler, and not let that be a demoralizing, you know, issue. Let that not be an excuse, but rather let that be a galvanizing point to continue to get some success as we head into the end of 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I think you don't have to look very far in the past to have an example of what the Jets can do without Blake Wheeler in the lineup. And so the truth is, this is, I mean, when a guy goes down, and your point is true, Drew, no, none of these guys are hoping a guy like Blake Wheeler goes down. Nobody says, oh, I wish he can go down so I can get more ice time. But you have to deal with what we call reality. And the reality is that Blake Wheeler could potentially be out of the Jets lineup for a while. That's what Paul Maurice said to you. Those are the words he used twice yesterday, a while. And he said, I'm not a doctor, so I'm going to wait for the evaluation and they'll see, you know, what it is and how he looks. So we're not going to waste our time speculating, but regardless.
I have a feeling, guys, it might be his right knee.
Thanks. Well, that's, doctor.
That's a good one, Dr. Ginsburg. But the truth is that at the same time, regardless of whether it's short or long, we're going to lean towards long based on what Paul Maurice said. But regardless, this is an opportunity for players to seize it, right? And so you've got guys like Evgeny Svechnikov playing 4 minutes. Well, Paul Maurice isn't going to have that luxury. Because the truth is, there's guys that, like I went through it earlier in the show, there's guys on the Moose who have been playing much better and are drivers. And like I said, there's a lot, right? You've got Jeff Malott, who signed his deal with the Jets in the summer. You've got, and he's a big boy, and he goes to the front of the net. Christian Reichel is one of the hardest working guys you'll ever watch play hockey. Austin Pagansky, who after kind of a disappointing start, he's been much better. Mikey Essiemon, who, as he mentioned, and obviously David Gustafson, who we've talked about throughout the course of the season.
Did you say Mikey Essiemon?
Yeah, I did. That's actually how he changed his name to that.
So I think what it means, though, is that there's opportunity, and obviously within the framework of the Jets, especially without Riley Nash right now, right? So without Riley Nash, you've got Jansen Harkins, who's looking, like I said, who's looking for that opportunity. You've got a guy like Christian Vesalainen. Maybe, you know, using him, like we've talked about, the shot of Christian Vesalainen. Someone said, well, you guys talk about a shot, and yet he doesn't take, you know, he doesn't use it. I think a lot of that is time and space. Maybe if you put Christian Vesalainen on the power play, maybe there's an opportunity there for him to use that shot and feel like he has a little more time and space.
Use
to
that
get
size,
it
Dave.
Well, and his size, of course, true. But I'm just saying, like, that's one of the elements that he doesn't use a lot. So maybe that's what you'll see. A guy like Christian Vesalainen sees an opportunity. I don't know. I'm not in Coach Paul Maurice's head, so I can't tell you how it'll materialize.
Because you're in Coach Eric Dubois's head.
I do. I am. But like I said, I think it's just an opportunity, and that's the way it has to be looked at. And like I said, look how the Jets did when they didn't have Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele in the lineup, right? They did all right, and they were able to kind of grow their team, or grow their points, I should say. So that's the most important thing for this Jets team, is just to seize this opportunity. And they've got guys who are going to be hungry for it. And that to me is the key. Like I said, Toninato, Harkins, Vesalainen, all of those guys whose minutes are being reduced are going to say, here's an opportunity.
Last break of the show, Marty Biron is going to join us on the other side to talk about the Sabres. They're in town on Tuesday. Talk about goaltending around the league. We always love getting together with our buddy Marty. Stay with us. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Joining us now on the show, our good friend Marty B. Ron. You know him from his work with, of course, MSG covering the Buffalo Sabres. You know him from his work on TSN and RDS, sporting an old school Quebec Nordique hoodie.
That's a beauty, Marty.
That is a beauty. That's a good one.
Have an old school Randy Carlisle Winnipeg Jets t-shirt in my closet as well. I usually put it underneath it, but I didn't. I forgot it this morning, and I should have worn it just for you guys.
Well, we appreciate the sentiment. We appreciate the thought, and we'll let that oversight go just this time, though. Next time, you best be wearing it. Nice to see you again, Marty. How are things?
I'm doing great. I'm actually trying to put pressure on Gary Bettman and the league to say, okay, enough with Arizona and all of the troubles that's happening down there. Move him out. I do think Houston would be pretty good, but if not, I mean, Quebec City is right there, but then we have to deal with, you know, an imbalance in the Western Conference, Eastern Conference, and all that. So I'm good with Houston, but at this point, like, oh, Arizona has been such a mess. And you guys know it. Like, I mean, they leave Winnipeg, they go to Arizona, and then the league is like, eh, yeah, you know what? We need a team back in Winnipeg because that's a market we need to have in Canada. And it's never been the same in Arizona, and that's trouble.
Well, I can't count the number of times I've accidentally forgot to pay my property taxes for years on end. I mean,
yeah. And listen, and I know Dennis Bernstein, who's a writer in L.A., and I do some work with him on XM Radio. He's really good at that stuff. He said, look, the city of Glendale is like $1 billion or something, like, you know, a budget for the year. So $1.5 million from the Arizona Coyotes is nothing. But the problem is that every year it's something, right? Every year there's an issue. They've changed ownership. And from ownership to ownership, it has not been figured out. And now they don't even have a place to play next year. Arizona is kicked out of the arena. They're looking for a place to play. It's just, it's no good.
It is no good, but we're not here to talk about the Coyotes. We're here to talk about the Buffalo Sabres, who are going to be in Winnipeg for their lone visit of the season come Tuesday night. Marty, yep. I mean, the Sabres are unfortunately where we're accustomed to seeing them, which is towards the bottom of the Eastern Conference, towards the bottom of their division, 8-15-3 so far this season. If it wasn't for the horrendous years that the Senators and the Canadians are having, they'd be right at the bottom. You know, why? You know, what's going wrong this year? Is this sort of where you expected the Sabres to be, or is this just a continuation of what has plagued that franchise for much of the last decade?
So I expected the Sabres to be where they are right now, but not in the way that they've done it. I'll tell you this. They started 5-1-1. They got unbelievable goaltending from Craig Anderson and a little bit from Dustin Tokarski. Then Craig Anderson got hurt in a San Jose game, and he's month-to-month right now. It's an upper body injury. We don't know really the details of it. But since he got hurt, it's been downward spiral from there. Tokarski had a couple of games where it was okay. He's had his struggle. Now he's on COVID-19 protocol, and I believe he's still not back in Buffalo because he tested positive when they were in Florida. And what happens is if you test positive on the road, you got to stay quarantined on the road until you get out of the protocol. So I don't think he's back in Buffalo yet. Aaron Dell has not performed well at all. They acquired Malcolm Subban from the Chicago Blackhawks. Actually, he was in the minors. He played one game. He got hurt at the end of the game. So now they're down to Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who played really well last night against the Rangers. He's been up and down. Like, he hasn't shown really good consistency with the Rochester Americans, but he did win Player of the Week award a few weeks back. So he has the tools. But goaltending has been really, really tough for the Sabres. And I actually thought the Sabres weren't going to score a lot of goals. I thought, offensively, they don't have anybody, right? Like, they don't have Eichel anymore. They don't have Reinhart anymore. And not that Taylor Hall is having a fantastic year, but he's not there. Like, it just didn't feel like the Sabres could score. And early in the season, they did score a lot of goals. Tage Thompson really got himself going, and he's playing center now. I mean, that was a huge surprise, and he's had a great season. Jeff Skinner has found the back of the net at times, and last night against the Rangers, he had a really good game, just couldn't score, but he had 9 attempts, 8 shots on goal. Dylan Cousins has had a good season. although Cousins has not played with anybody of substance. At one point, he was on the line with Cajula and Henestrosa. And I'm like, please give Dylan Cousins some help. But he's been pretty decent. Dallin has shown some numbers. He had some issues early in the season defending, but I think it's cleared up a little bit. So there is some really nice piece with the Sabres moving forward. Goaltending's been a really bad issue with them, and now they find themselves in a little bit of a funk. Casey Mittelstadt is out for a long term. He re-aggravated an injury. He got surgery a couple days ago. They hope he'll be back before the end of the season, but who knows? So that's really is what the Sabres are about right now, and they're struggling a little bit.
And Marty, you know, just sticking with goaltending, and then obviously, you know, we want to talk, you know, about, you mentioned Eichel and some other players, you know, on the Sabres who the Jets play next Tuesday. But you mentioned Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, and that's what I wanted to ask you about, because he, of course, was the goaltender that was in net for the Zegras to Sonny Milano goal, the Michigan-style style pass. And I wanted to ask you not just specifically about how you thought Luukkonen handled that, but, you know, how you think, you know, goaltenders feel when that type of move is pulled on them. And then, of course, you know, I also wanted to get in John Tortorella's comments, who coached you in the New York Rangers. And he essentially, for those who haven't heard, you know, Torts' comments, he's basically, you know, he said, you know, it was a beautiful goal, but he's not sure, you know, how good that is, you know, for the game to have those types of goals. So just what is your kind of, you know, take on the, you know, Zegras pass to Milano, that goal, and, you know, how maybe goaltenders react when players try those types of moves and are successful with them?
Okay, so goal of the year. Number one, I don't care what else happens. This is the goal of the year. And probably the goal of many years. Since Svechnikov did his Michigan move a couple of years back, we haven't seen a goal that's been that great. And that's also considering Connor McDavid went through the Rangers and four guys and put it in the net. But I still think that the Zegras to Milano is the goal of the year for me. That's one. Two, so for goaltenders, it's a hard play to dissect, because as soon as you see that Zegras has time behind the net and he corrals the puck and he puts it on his stick, you're thinking, I'm going to have to go to a post or the other, and I have to keep my eyes on the player and see where he's going to go. And so that's why Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is looking, okay, I may have to go on my left, on my right, see where Zegras is going to go. He's a lefty, so it's probably going to be on the blocker side. So you lose track of what's happening in front of you. And what's happening in front of you is, number one, bad coverage by the Sabres. I mean, Sonny Milano is standing right there on top of the crease, and nobody put pressure on Zegras behind the net. So I really think this is one of the hardest plays for a goaltender to make, because usually when a player has the puck behind the net, you can peek in front of the net to see what's going on, because there's no really passing threat when somebody is behind the net. But what Zegras did is he opened a passing lane by going over the net, and all of a sudden you don't know what's in front of you. And most often when there's a play from behind the net to the front, it's a low play. So you're going to go low to the ice. You're going to take the bottom of the ice away. But this is a high play. It opens up the top of the net, right? So it's a very, very complicated play for a goaltender. The only thing that you may want to do, and if you look back at the replay, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, he watches the puck go over the net. Like, get your glove up there. Get something. Like, you know, it's like you can cut that pass off. If somebody's behind the net and is looking to pass it over, use your glove hand. That was perfect for him. Now, if it's on the blocker side, it's a little bit harder because you have the stick and the knob could get caught in the net, and there's a few different things. But on the glove side, get your glove up to cut the pass and not let it go to the front of the net. But again, creativity. I love Torts. I'm a big fan of John Tortorella. Always liked him. Love talking to him. I think he's trying to just maybe put on a show. Like, come on now. Like, this is awesome. Like, to say that you're not sure if it's good for the game, and, you know, years ago he would have got his head taken off. Okay. Well, I mean, after Hurdle scored a goal on me,
I was going to ask.
You know, like, our whole bench was upset. Well, why would the bench upset? Not because he pulled the puck behind his legs and scored, because it was his fourth goal of the game in a 9-2 game, and he was celebrating like he had just won the Stanley Cup. That's why the bench was upset, not because he showed tremendous skills and scored a beautiful goal. It's what happened after. And, you know, if you look at Zegras and Milano, they celebrated, but they didn't go to center ice and, you know, pumped it up and everything, which I think the Sabres would have been upset with if they did that. And the Sabres were fine with it. It was just a beautiful goal.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Marty covers the Sabres for MSG. Buffalo in town on Tuesday night to face the Winnipeg Jets.
You know, Marty, when things are going well with the parent club, you look down to the AHL and you think to yourself, are there any positives, any bright spots? And Rochester right now is sitting second in the North, and they've got some nice players. You know, Jack Quinn, Peyton Krebs, who they got obviously in the trade. So is that kind of a bright light for folks in Buffalo?
Yes.
Is to see these young prospects who are in the system? And what is the game plan for them? Is the plan to allow them to develop at the AHL level still? Or do you think that they'll be in the NHL sooner rather than later?
So I'm thinking this season, you talk about Jack Quinn, who's played phenomenal in the American League at one point, and I don't know, I didn't check this morning. At one point, he was leading the scoring race in the AHL. You have J.J. Peterka, who was a second-round pick 2 years ago. The Sabres were really high on him. You saw him at the World Juniors playing for Germany last year. J.J. Peterka, another one that's having a fantastic year. Peyton Krebs has got himself going. You've got Matthias Samuelsson on the back end. This is a guy that will be in the NHL probably before the end of the season, depending on what the Sabres do with their defense core. But the plan for the young guys in Rochester is for them to develop in Rochester, have a successful year, get to the playoffs, play well in the playoffs, hope you go on a playoff run, and then see where you're at next season. But I do believe that at some point this year, all three of those forwards, Quinn, Peterka, and Krebs, will probably get a call up in Buffalo, will get some experience in Buffalo, and it will be a bit of a reward. You're doing so well in Rochester. We want you to come up to Buffalo. Number one, make a little bit of money. I mean, people forget about that, but you're making 65, 70 grand in the minors. You get called up. You know, it's a 750 minimum that you're making. And it's fun to get that paycheck after even just 5 or 6 days in the National Hockey League. And that's from my own experience when I played in Rochester and I got called up and I was like, woohoo, I'm going to go buy a new suit. I'm going to go for a good steak dinner. It's going to be great. But it's a little bit of a reward, right? So you need those rewards for the players to know that their effort is not just being pushed aside. So I do believe we're going to see those guys. You know, the Sabres have such a deep prospect pool right now. Looking at Owen Power, obviously, going to be with Team Canada, the World Juniors, having a great season in Michigan. Eric Portillo, goaltender with Michigan, is having a really good season. Devin Levi, acquired in the Sam Reinhart trade with Florida. Devin Levi was Team Canada's goaltender last year at the World Juniors. He's having a fantastic season. So they have a lot of high-end prospect. And if you combine that to the Cousins, Thompson, Mittelstadt, Olofsson, Asplund, there's going to be Dahlin. There's going to be some really good strides moving forward. It's just going to be another couple of years before you get the full effect of all of it.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, Marty. You sort of mentioned him at the end of your sentence there, is Rasmus Dahlin. This is a guy who, of course, was a top pick of the Sabres, a top pick overall a couple of years ago. You know, where is he at in his development? Is he getting sort of worn down by the losing that he's experienced? You know, do the Sabres need to get more out of him? Sort of, you know, where is he at in his development on the back end for Buffalo?
So the big question with Dahlin is, who is his partner? You know, every time you look around the league and you see a stud, you think they have a really good partner to complement them. Look at Adam Fox, right? He's playing with Ryan Lindgren. Like, Lindgren is not a fancy defenseman, but he's a stay-at-home and will help Fox, right? Kale McCarr was playing with what's his name? He's not there anymore last year, and this year's had a couple of partners, but finding a partner is the biggest challenge for a young defenseman.
Ryan Graves, I think, is who you were thinking of, Marty.
Yeah, that's right. Ryan Graves. Yeah, that's and it was a great pairing. And then obviously they lost Graves, and they were going to lose him at the expansion draft, so they made a trade. But still, finding a partner for a young defenseman like Dahlin is the number one priority, and the Sabres haven't found that yet. They were thinking Henry Jokiarju was going to be his partner. And Jokiarju got hurt in the first game of the season. And now last night, for the first time, they've gotten paired back together. So I would think that when Buffalo comes into Winnipeg this week, they probably will be a pairing. But I still don't know that Jokiarju is that guy that should be playing with Rasmus Dahlin. So Dahlin's played, I'll say this. I'm a big defender or protector of Rasmus Dahlin. I'll tell you when he's terrible, and he's had a couple of one-on-ones where he got completely, you know, schooled this year and looked terrible, and they resulted in goals. And I'm like, hey, it's the NHL. You can't get beat one-on-one like this, right? But he's worked on it. He's been way better. And offensively with the puck, he's still so very, very poised and good. And that's a quality that not a lot of defensemen have. He's not going to have the wow speed of Makar. He's not going to have the passing like Fox and the creativity that Fox has. And there's so many young defensemen around the league, Quinn Hughes, and that really are stand out. Dahlin is in that talk of these young defensemen, but he's not as flashy and not as quick and not as explosive as those guys, but still performing to a high level.
No, Marty, we have to ask you about, you know, the goalie interference, because I mean, there's nobody better to ask. You've played over 500 games, you know, in the NHL. And, you know, I'm not sure if you saw, you know, last night's goal that, you know, was originally called a goal on the ice. So you saw it, and obviously Jets fans were quickly thinking back to the game against Carolina when it looked like Sebastian Aho was going to be called for goalie interference on Connor Hellebuyck. But what is kind of, I realize, you know, it's a complicated question because there is, you know, some gray area when it comes to goalie interference. But in terms of what we've seen, you know, just in the first kind of, you know, quarter of the season here, I mean, what's kind of your take on, you know, some of these goalie interference calls and some of the non-calls that we're seeing?
Okay, so usually I would say that the situation room in Toronto is pretty good. They make the right calls, and they usually, kind of have the rule to back them up. Last night's call was the right call. So Pierre-Luc Dubois interferes with Thatcher Demko in the crease. I mean, and it doesn't, even though I think this is still results in a goal, even if Dubois is not there, I don't think Demko can recover, but you can't take that into consideration. You have to take the play for what it is. Dubois comes in, makes contact with Demko, turns him around a little bit. On the backside, the puck goes in the net. I think that's a good no-goal call. Now, let's go back to Carolina against Winnipeg. And I'll tell you this. Connor Hellebuyck could not have said it any better in the press conference than what he explained. And he did it without emotion. He stayed calm. He used facts. It was really good. That rule 69 is rule 69 when it comes to goalie interference. Loose pucks and rebounds. If a goalie and a player are going for a loose puck or a rebound simultaneously, and there is incidental contact, a goal should be allowed. The problem in the Hellebuyck-Aho issue is that the first whack, there's a loose puck and rebound, and they're both going for it. The second whack, the puck gets wedged underneath Hellebuyck's pad. And at that point, it is not a loose puck and rebound situation. It's a covered puck. And the league, I don't know, really switched their gear to say, in a covered puck, you cannot push a goalie's pad. You cannot interfere with a goalie. There's no incidental contact. It is not a good goal. And Hellebuyck says, the puck was lodged underneath my pad for 90 degrees until I got completely turned around and the puck got released. So I agree with him. That was no goal on the play for me. The league failed on this one. And listen, they make mistakes. It's human error. I get it. Last night in Buffalo, we had one. The Sabres are down 2-1. They score a goal to make it 2-2. There's a league-initiated review in the last minute. They look for offside. They deemed it was offside. Don Granato is complaining. He's like, We tagged up. We tagged up. Our player did not touch the puck inside the zone until everybody was tagged up. They're like, we reviewed it already. It's no goal. Well, darn it. We found the clips and we were able to explain it. And it was onside and it should have been a goal. So it happens. There's human error. I just hate when the system is supposed to be set that if you have all the tools at your disposal, you should be making the right call. And now that's two in a week and more, I'm sure, will happen where the wrong call is made.
You know, Marty, we're talking about the Sabres and things in Buffalo and looking to the future and knowing that, and you said it's going to be a few years, but they've got a lot of bright spots. How are folks in Buffalo handling that? I mean, it's 10 straight years without a playoffs. It's, I think, 12 of the last 14. There was 2 years in a row, but then two previous to that, no playoffs. So, I mean, Buffalo is a solid NHL market, as solid you're going to find, you know, one of the best TV markets in the country. But how can fans continue to support knowing that it's the promise of, well, it'll be good in a few years? How are they handling that in the market?
Well, it's tough. I'll tell you this. And you can see the attendance when you watch the games. There's been 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 at games. Now there's a multiple factors for that. COVID regulation and vaccine mandate to come to the games. The Canadian border was not open for a long time. So it really did not allow Canadian fans to come in and watch NHL hockey in Buffalo. The performances on the ice are one of them as well. So for me, there's a multitude of factors. But the fact that they've not performed well and it's been rebuild over rebuild over rebuild is probably the leading one, that fans are not coming to games right now. And they're just, you know, losing their patience a little bit. Now, they're willing to give Kevin Adams a little bit more of a leash, if I would say, because Kevin is a local guy. He grew up in Buffalo. He won a Stanley Cup. He's communicated to the fans really well through interviews, press conference. And I think what his approach is a good one, but fans are not willing to go in blind and say, hey, we're going to go to games and hope it turns out well. They want to see results. I've been there. Listen, right before the lockout, I believe it was 02, 03, and 03, 04. We went through bankruptcy. Ownership in Buffalo was very unstable. People didn't go to games because they're like, why should we go to games? Like they're trading all the players away and they're, you know, it just was a mess. And then 05, 06, after the lockout, at the start of the season, we had 10, 12,000 in the stands. It wasn't great, but then we started winning. Chris Drury, Danny Briere, Vanek, Pominville, Roy, Ryan Miller, name them, right? We started winning, and all of a sudden the building's full. So winning will fix it, but fans are a little bit tired of waiting for that.
Marty, we'll let you go on this last question. Here in Winnipeg, Eric Comrie is the backup goaltender. He's the, you know, he's been handed the backup goaltender job this offseason. The team said to him, look, you're our guy who's going to back up Connor Hellebuyck. When you're a younger goalie or a bit of a journeyman goalie, and then you finally get that opportunity.
Marty's still young. What are you talking about, Drew?
Not Marty. I'm talking about Eric Comrie. But when you're handed that role and you're basically told with confidence, you're going to be our guy, and you've bounced around back and forth and you've never really been able to establish yourself at the NHL level, what does that do for a young goalie's confidence, you know, for a guy like Eric Comrie?
Well, first of all, you need to win games, right? And you need performances, because if you don't perform, especially with a guy like Connor Hellebuyck, you're not going to play regularly. And that's what you want to do. He's getting an opportunity. He's earned that opportunity for years. You know, it was Comrie and Hellebuyck in the minors together. And now, like, it was, who's going to take the lead? Hellebuyck took the lead, and it took Comrie a lot longer to get there and moved around a little bit. But he's in the NHL where he wants to be. So you have to be a pro, and you have to get results. If you don't get results, Paul Maurice is not going to be able to say, hey, listen, we're going to play you every three games, every four games. It's going to be tough. So, look, I thought he had he struggled early in the game against Vancouver. It was 3-3 halfway in the game, and then played real well and shut the door down. It was unfortunate that they lost in the shootout, and the Elias Pettersson move is just really tough to stop with the one-hand Forsberg. But I thought he recovered, and that's one thing coaches want to see, to be able to gain confidence. And now you got to put the piece together. So, look, it's his opportunity. and he has to continue to earn it every game that he plays. And that's going to be like that as a backup for a long time. It's just the way it is. It's a tough job to do. But I mean, it's a great job if you can handle it and perform well.
Marty, appreciate your time. Always appreciate your insight. We'll let you get on with your Saturday. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Awesome. Next time I'll put my Jets t-shirt on.
Yes, that's right. Next time with the Jets tee. Take care, Marty. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks, Marty.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
There he goes. Marty Biron joining us this morning.
Ezzy, I'm shocked you didn't show him your t-shirt.
Well, I didn't want to steal his thunder, but yeah, I am wearing a
you're wearing Violent your
Gentleman Hartford Whalers shirt. So yeah, it's same era, right?
There you go. That's nice. You guys are both supporting dear and departed teams that maybe one day will come back and have a role to play in this new NHL. That's it for this Saturday morning. Gentlemen, I have to say, there are no more 9 o'clock starts for the remainder of the regular season. We've done it. It was a back-to-back late nights. It's been really so many late games so far this season, but we're through that. Kudos to you, Dave. Kudos to you sometimes, Ezzy. No offense, but sometimes only. Dave and I get the full kudos. You get, you know, a partial kudos. But that being said, it has been a fun Saturday morning. It was a fun Thursday night, and it was a fun Friday night, of course. We'll be back on Tuesday night after the Jets and the Sabres. But before we go, Ezzy, you have a Tough Duck toque to give away.
Yeah, I was kind of struggling. There were a lot of good comments on last night's post-game show. I think it was just because it was, you know, 12:30 in the morning and I was tired and I wasn't decisive enough to pick one. But we're going to give one. This isn't for a specific comment, but, you know, he's here every Saturday. He often comes and watches the post-game show. Rony Dhaliwal, we're going to give him one. We're going to give you a Tough Duck toque. So send me an email, Ezra@illegalcurve.com, Rony. And I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. I imagine it's Rony or Rony, but I think it's Rony. So send me an email again, Ezra@illegalcurve.com, and then Tough Duck will ship you out a toque. And even though it's a little milder, you know, you can never have enough good quality toques made right here in Manitoba. So congratulations to Rony.
There you go. Good choice there, Mr. Ginsburg. We remind you, after every Winnipeg Jets post-game show, we have the Tough Duck hardest-hitting comment. So join us on Tuesday night after the Jets and the Sabres post-game right around 9:40, 9:45, thereabouts, back here on our YouTube channel. If you haven't done so yet, smash the like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, tell your friends and family, leave comments on the YouTube, leave comments on the podcast, tell everybody that the place to be after each and every Winnipeg Jets game and on Saturday mornings is the Illegal Curve Hockey YouTube channel. We want to say a big thank you to our sponsors. They make this show. They make the website a possibility. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and our friends at Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. The Ginsburg guarantee has been handed out. The Tiger Cats are going to win the Grey Cup tomorrow, which means we'll all be celebrating a Blue Bomber victory right around 8:30 or so p.m. tomorrow night. Let's go, Winnipeg Blue Bombers, 2 years in a row, or 2 games in a row. They should hopefully be Grey Cup champions.
Before we wrap here, Drew, I think people really want to know, Dave, what Drew's Grey Cup meal is going to be tomorrow.
We're ordering pizza. I'm going to go to my folks' house, and my mom's already told us that she's ordering some pizza.
Oh, so we'll watch the game with my folks. You can't go wrong with that. I mean, I was assuming you might eat a rack of ribs or a half chicken or something, but yeah, pizza will do.
Guys, I mean, the Jets are off today. They're traveling back to Winnipeg, and they're off tomorrow. Does that mean after tonight's Moose Griffins game, we should do a post-game show? Anyone?
No, that means after the...
Anyone?
That means when this show ends in the next minute or so, I'm planning on blocking both of your phone numbers until about Tuesday afternoon.
That's fine. But Drew, just remember, you got to let the people know. IllegalCurve.com will be their home for all the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news, video, and audio. So we'll have a complete recap. I will be at Canada Life Center tonight.
Are you bringing the teddy bear? It is teddy bear toss.
It is teddy bear toss. I don't think we're allowed to throw from the press box, despite the fact that the players were clearly doing that. The Moose had a video clip up of that yesterday. So, no, I won't be bringing it. I mean, maybe I'll bring
it. I can be your teddy bear if you want to throw me on the ice, Dave.
That's right. Bring Ezzy and chuck him on the ice. It'll be a group effort.
And actually, If you're going to the Winnipeg Ice, they are also doing, for some reason, they're doing their teddy bear toss tonight as well. So if you're going to the ice, I mean, it's a good, it all goes to a good cause. So make sure you bring a teddy bear if you're going to the Moose or the Ice games tonight. But should be some good Saturday night hockey for folks who are so inclined. We've given away four tickets for tonight's game. Two pairs, actually. So maybe some guys from the chat will be coming friends. We don't know, but they'll be going, sitting right behind the bench, the Grand Rapids bench, the really cool seats. So we'll be there representing and covering the team. And then there's some really good stuff in the recap yesterday from the Moose. So if you haven't checked that out already, legalcurve.com.
There you go. Well said, Mr. Manouk. He's a company man. Thank you to everybody for joining us on Thursday night's postgame, on Friday night's postgame. And again, this morning, we appreciate the love and support. And that's why we do this all the time. Our friends at Winnipeg Sports Talk have a special Grey Cup edition of their show that's starting now, if it hasn't already started. So you can check that out over on their YouTube channel. Get you set a little bit more for tomorrow night's big game between the Bombers and the Tiger Cats. For the human teddy bear, Ezra Ginsberg, I should say, for Dave Manouk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.